Hi, I'm Scott Fulton, the host of the Rebel Diaries podcast. This show will help you learn how to make work better for you, your colleagues, and the organization you work for. I believe the modern workplace is broken for too many people, with leaders and their teams drowning in corporate complexity, information overload, and unnecessary levels of stress. Having spent over 20 years leading disruptive, high-performing teams who have won international awards for their impact, I've now dedicated my career to helping coach and train leaders and teams to deliver more value and impact at work whilst reducing the risk of burnout, overload, and wasted effort. This podcast is dedicated to you and thousands like you who know work can and should be better. You'll get tips and insights from me, as well as the amazing guests I invite to be on the show. Many of them have disrupted their industries and are thought leaders, speakers, and authors who have fascinating stories and advice to share. Thank you for listening. I'm Scott Fulton, and welcome to the Rebel Diaries show. Hi, and welcome to the Rebel Diaries podcast. It's been a year. Can you believe it? I launched the show in April 2022, and somehow I have managed to publish an episode every single week. To be honest with you, I'm surprised I managed to do that. There's been a close call quite a few times, but managed to scrape through. So a big thank you to all the guests who have appeared on the show, and of course to you, the listeners, for sticking with me throughout the last year, if you have from the beginning, or if you're relatively new, or maybe this is even your first episode. What I thought would be good would be to just pull together some of my favorite clips from the last year and share them with you. Some of these will be new to you. You may have missed these episodes, so it's worth definitely checking back to catch the full episode if you like these clips. Don't worry, the show is carrying on. I have a new guest lined up for next week, and let's see if we can get through another year together. That's enough rambling. On with the show. In this clip, I'm chatting to Kerry. She's an agile behavioral coach, and we are discussing why people hold back from communicating properly in teams. When you're helping these teams, I'd imagine one of the things that can cause real difficulty between team members and from the leadership is communication, or lack of it, or style of communication.
Yeah, so I see quite a lot of that. And I think what sits behind a lot of the issues around communication is a lot of fear. So a lot of things aren't communicated because either we're worried that we're going to get questions that we won't be able to answer, in which case, if we avoid telling people, then we think we avoid answering those questions. But also when we fear that people aren't going to like what we're telling them, and we both don't want to deal with potential conflict, but also underpinning almost all human behavior is the desire to feel connected, to feel included and wanted. And this happens on a deeply subconscious level. You're not, on a day-to-day basis, we're not largely aware of that need to be connected and accepted. But it does drive a lot of the behaviours that we then see when people don't communicate, especially when people don't communicate difficult information or information that they think people might have issue with. And you see this particularly around feedback. So a lot of leaders will avoid giving feedback, save for the dreaded annual one-to-one or appraisal, at which point that's the time where they then have to say all of the things that they've been avoiding saying for all of this time, for fear of how that individual is going to respond, but also for fear that, again, they won't be liked. Most people want to be liked. Most leaders want to be, on a certain level, want to be liked and valued and appreciated. They want people to do work for them and with them because they like to, much more than having to crack the whip. So when you then get into those situations and leaders have to give feedback that's uncomfortable and awkward, that's why you see things disguised with the feedback sandwich, which is where we're trying to smooth the way. We still have to deliver the uncomfortable feedback, but we're desperately trying to soothe the way. So that's a social nicety, hugely ineffective, doesn't really work at all.
In this clip, I'm talking to David Bracken. He is a leading entrepreneur in the circular economy. He's the founder of Stuff You Sell, the eBay selling assistant. He is also a managing director of another company, a counselor, a family man. And in this clip, we're talking about how he flirts with disaster when it comes to deadlines. He juggles so many priorities. It was a fascinating episode.
I know, certainly through reports and presentations, you can potentially just
keep doing them and never end. If you don't have that deadline, oh, I'll rewrite that bit, or it's not quite right, I'll rewrite that. I mean, I've been trying to write a book for about 5 years now, and I've read the advice is just get it down, just write a bit every day, and then you tidy up at the end rather than trying to just keep redoing and redoing.
One of the things I try never to do is never to write on the computer. The temptation to write into Word and format as you go is terrible, because you spend half your time formatting, and you write stuff down on pieces of paper, then you translate it into a computer. It's much easier to be an editor than it is to be a creator. It's certainly true. So the first thing you should do is do your creation in the most natural way possible and create. And then everything else is an editing job. If I have a deadline, that really helps me to start the task that we were talking about before. That's probably the one thing that will make me stop doing the washing up and go and get on with the task. I think in the back of my brain, the way I approach deadlines is to flirt with disaster with them and say, it might get cancelled. I might not have to do this. So I should leave it right until the last possible minute to find out whether I really do need to do this. I do need to do this task, and I've only got 2 hours to do it, so I better well pull my socks up and get on with it. And now, obviously, if something goes completely wrong at that point, you end up looking a bit silly or a bit late, but that's just the way my mind works when it comes to those tasks.
Has that ever happened?
One of the perils of being the boss within an organization is you do get to change the rules slightly on deadlines. But outside of that, for example, in my council work, you have to do stuff before a meeting, and the meeting has to happen at a certain time. And you might be meeting with external people, and if you find yourself standing up in front of a group of people trying to decide an issue and you haven't done the thinking yet, there's a very nasty moment when the floor won't swallow you up, even though you're wishing it would. So I find that really drives good preparation, is never wanting to do that, never wanting that to happen again. That rush of embarrassment and the heart starts pumping as you think, whoops, maybe I should have thought through that question before.
Zoe Thompson is a lifestyle and well-being coach. I knew her from when we worked in the police. In this clip, we're discussing the mental health responsibilities for an organisation, managers and individuals. The full episode is well worth checking out if you've not listened to it. Do you think there's an increasing blurring line with companies and their responsibility for their employees' well-being versus the employees' personal responsibility for well-being?
I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because when I work with managers, I'm really clear in helping them to how they word things and how they go into these one-to-ones with staff to say, this is not about you rolling your sleeves up and fixing people. This is about you giving people the support to do what they need to do to help themselves. To even just the wording of, okay, what do you need from me to support you to do that, as opposed to, okay, what can I do to help you? Because it's not that individual as a manager, it's not the manager's responsibility to help that person get from A to B. We can support people to get from A to B, but we need to be hands off and giving that support, that guidance. We can't do it for them. You can't force people forward. You can't force people to make changes. I think it's really important for organizations to provide support. I think in terms of what else is available, in the pressures on the NHS, waiting lists are huge. So I think it's balancing how do you support your staff. There's definitely real change in what staff need, what support staff need. But I think if you've got, it's balancing, isn't it? If you've got a member of staff out sick for 6 months, what's the cost to the organisation? And I think the last figure I saw is that for every pound invested in mental health support, it's a 7 times return on that investment. So there's an element of, as an organisation, as a business, you want high-performing people who are there and who are present. So if you're losing money or it's a cost to your business because people are absent, or they are there but they're not present or focused or getting as much done as they could, then there's a cost to the business. So providing some support to help people with that probably speeds the process up of getting them back or moving them forward to where you want them to be. Is it the company's responsibility? I think it's definitely a joint responsibility, because there's individual personal responsibility, but there's also that duty of care as well. And I think that's where finding that balance between what do you do as an organization? Where is your responsibility as a manager?
And then where is that individual taking responsibility? And I think it needs to be almost met halfway when that individual steps forward to say, I need some support. I can't do this on my own. Then the business, the manager can then enable that. If you've got an individual that's not willing to step forward, then that's part of that personal responsibility, isn't it? I would make a very good HR manager, wouldn't I?
Some of those personal difficulties and mental health challenges will be triggered by things at home and outside of the workplace. Yep. And that's where I guess it is tricky. And some managers might find that difficult then in a conversation. If an employee reveals that kind of stuff, they might like, whoa, I don't know how to deal with this. But equally, there's the duty of care, as you said, for the organization to make sure that their employees are being treated fairly and well by their managers and their colleagues. And a lack of action to deal with that and stamp that out absolutely is. And I say I always say the organization as if it's this big faceless thing. So I'm going to specifically say the leaders in that organization to take action and get rid of bad behavior. But I've seen that doesn't often happen. So what I'd imagine is going on in some organizations is it's creating this mental health problem for employees, and the organization's going, oh, our employees have got mental health problems. Let's bring in some people to help that and not actually fix the root of the problem in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the challenge, isn't it, of what is the root of the problem? And coaching, counseling can help the individual with that. But as a business organization, it's the responsibility of the team leaders and the managers to identify when there's a problem. And it is difficult. And a lot of I get requests for managing conflict training or helping managers to have those difficult conversations. Saying nothing isn't always the kindness that people think it is. Actually, sometimes those early intervention conversations are much kinder. Even when they're uncomfortable, they're much kinder than not doing anything, because these things escalate really quickly and these things take a long time for people to recover from. You talk to people who've had a bad boss 20 years ago, they still remember very clearly those interactions and how those interactions felt. And then they'll go into future managers expecting, and they will respond in a different way. It's very hard to undo. It's very easy to allow to happen and very hard to undo. So it is individual responsibility for managers and also team members. And so the whole ethos of a team is working together and bringing people up and helping support each other, that actually it's just as important for individuals to call it out too.
Mo Choice is a co-founder of 12 businesses, and he has been coaching entrepreneurs, leaders, and teams since 2005. There is some swearing in this episode, so some of them have crept into the clip. If I had to pick one episode where I laughed the most, it was probably this one with Mo. He's quite a character, and I probably will get him back on for a future episode. So be sure to check the full episode out if you haven't already. In this clip, we are talking about what people really mean when they say, I don't have time. Yeah, it's what you choose to do with your time, isn't it? Yeah. Everyone's got the same amount of time.
That's the awareness thing, right? Mm. I don't have time. I don't have time for this. But you're posting every 5 minutes on LinkedIn. So what do you mean you don't have time? Get off LinkedIn for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I say to people, 2 hours of reflection a month is enough. Or 1 hour of reflection every fortnight. Or half an hour every week is enough. And the three questions, where am I going? How do I want to get there? What does it look like in the next week or in the next 2 weeks or in the next month? If you do that every month, right? Or every 2 weeks or you can do it every day. Sometimes I do it every day when I'm really stuck, Scott. I'll wake up in the day and say, what does today look like in the ideal? And then at the end of the day, I'll ask myself, did it match what I planned? And if not, why not? And how do I do better tomorrow? Steve Jobs has that thing, right, in the commencement speech, where he says, if you wake up, look in the mirror every day and say, am I looking forward to today? And for 4 or 5 days, the answer is no, you need to fundamentally change what you're doing. It's the same kind of concept. There's not that many truths to life, really. It's just that people say it in different ways, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing, though. It's like who are you going to blame anyway? What are you going to blame? Oh, I don't have enough time. Okay, so who are you blaming exactly for that?
Netflix. They're tempting me with too much TV. It's too good.
It's that fucking thing, the auto thing that goes to the next episode. That does my head in. I want to watch the credits, and it's like it's flicked to the next episode. I can't find the remote, and it's flicked.
Oh no! Now I've got to watch it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how this. So your question, I think, was an important one. Is the current situation? I think it's both, because never have we had more connection with others, access to knowledge, access to ideas, access to never have we had a time where we can make money ourselves online without having to get a job and work 9 to 5.
Never have we a physical office.
I sometimes my calls start at 11. I don't do calls before 11. I just don't want to get on. I can literally roll out of bed 10:45. Turn on my, brush my hair, turn on my laptop and start work. Literally. Whereas in the old, when I was working at Good Street, I'm up at 6 a.m. I got no choice. I'm on the underground with no phones either in those days. It's like, I used to always be late, Scott, because I didn't like waiting, right? Really. Or that was my excuse. I don't like waiting for people. Now I don't mind waiting because I'm on my phone. Now I get annoyed when people turn up. It's like, oh, fuck, I was in the middle of this article. I was watching this. It's like when you get annoyed when someone calls you on your phone. It's like, what's the point of the phone? It's like, I was watching this fucking video. Why'd you call me? This is it. So life changes and we adapt to it. But I think we've got the best opportunity now to figure out where we want to go. I mean, the fact that people talk about personal development, mental health, well-being, these things, these are old concepts. But everyone's talking about it. Most companies have a well-being officer and mental health first aiders, and coaching is normal now. It has been in America for a while, but it's getting normal in the UK. Therapy's normal now. I think this is good. And I think, when you look at these webinars and stuff that people run, people are signing up to these. I run a monthly webinar and people sign up to them, so people are interested in learning and where did we have that before? Like, I didn't have that growing up. At least I didn't know about it.
No.
But the other side of it is I'm scrolling on Instagram and I can't get off, or I was researching personal development on YouTube. Now I'm watching two giraffes fighting over a female giraffe. And it's like, how did I get there? It's the rabbit hole. And this is the thing about what I was saying earlier about when I get focused on something and I lose track of, but it's like, if you know this, then come up with put an alarm on your phone.
Yeah. Nick Elston is a leading inspirational speaker on the lived experience of mental health. In this clip from the show, we are talking about the level of disengagement and causes of that disengagement for employees in a post-COVID world. What kind of behavior are you seeing that driving in corporates? People just shutting down? Are they disengaging with work? Are they anxious? What's going on?
Yeah, I think there's a lethargy. This is a generalism, of course, but there is certainly a lethargy, or again, that lack of hope or aspiration. And I think people just become quiet. And it's the same with home working, I guess. If you look at, this is a big subject, but without going too much down a rabbit hole, if you look at like the conditioning impact of stay home, save lives, which was obviously what we were told for the best part of 2 years, and I was shielded through a lot of that as well. So that kind of impact of that, even though that was done to protect us and to put things in place to protect everything and all that kind of stuff, the politics isn't the point. But the conditioning impact is stay home, save lives. By default, people start thinking inside is safe and outside isn't safe. That's what we're left with in that sense. So even though I work in this space all the time, I surround myself with fantastic solution-focused professionals, psychologists, GPs, within my network, my own coaches. That in October last year, when I first went and flew to an event for the first time in a long time, I felt petrified. And knowing this stuff is very different because it has a conditioning impact. And I think for me, that's the impact, is the conditioning element of where we are. And I think that's why we live in a very passive-aggressive society right now. There's a lot of strong opinions, a lot of platforms to share those opinions on. So I think now more than ever, it needs to be about human-to-human conversations, especially in the workplace. If you lead a team of 10 people, you're going to have 10 different experiences of life and business right now. So no more can we generalize. It needs to be human-to-human. But actually, quite simply and quite humanly, it needs to be led by compassion. We don't have to take a competitive approach into conversations with people. We don't have to enforce our beliefs onto people or to convince somebody to agree with our view of the world. We can listen to people and understand without having to win that conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And there's also, people are going to be dealing with a lot more than they would have before. There's talk of a mental health crisis, isn't there, in terms of the outcomes of COVID, the impact it's had on people and the isolation, and that's going to affect how people perform at work. And it's going to be reliant on leaders and managers understanding that people aren't always going to be, you know, they've got stuff going on they may not know about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there still needs to be those kind of, there's a piece that I've been doing. I write a lot for the HR community as well, like people like CIPD and HR Zone and stuff. And I've been doing a lot of articles around the use of vulnerability, but also who looks after the people who looks after people. But actually, where are the battle lines when it comes to supporting people and not supporting people? And very often, extremes of what we consider mental health and well-being to be in the workplace. So people are either going to think it's going to be dry, heavy, boring, that I'm going to go in and try and fix them. That's not me at all. Or they think I'm going to light a bonfire outside, run around naked with a joss stick. I'm up for anything, by the way. But somewhere in the middle is the truth. So we either think it's really fluffy or we think it's really dry, and therefore it's really hard to engage in that stuff. The other extreme is that if we are a leader, especially a people leader in any way, shape or form, we have two main reactions to people struggling in front of us. We either try and fix them, which ethically and morally isn't our place to do, including myself into that equation, by the way, or we keep them at arm's length because it just seems quite intense to deal with, especially if somebody is at a point of crisis. And again, somewhere in the middle is the truth. It is important to know how we can support people, but for me, the most important question for you is how can't you support people? Is giving people the terms of engagement when it comes to this stuff. So I have a playbook of a conversation that people can use to safeguard themselves, safeguard the other person, but make sure that they're signposted to help that can support them. And I think when we take that approach, that self-protection first approach, we then start to have more conversations with more people. But we're not good at being selfish in the UK, and that's the problem.
Zena Everett is an in-demand speaker on crazy busyness and productivity. And she is also an author. Zena and I really gelled. I probably have the most interest in her world of work around helping teams be productive and cut through corporate nonsense. This clip is about wasteful meetings. Haven't we all been in many of those? And pushing back to our leaders. Why do you think it just carries on? It sounds so obvious, doesn't it? Like, people are in the meetings themselves and they're walking out going, well, that was a waste of 2 hours.
Yeah.
But nothing seems to change unless people like us come in and say, this is shit, frankly. I'm sure
I think you're on something there. Maybe I should be everywhere. I do think people are having really good conversations about this stuff now. And I also think there's a problem with gurus, isn't there? Everybody wants some kind of wonderful silver bullet, whereas actually this stuff is just so obvious. It's saying why, like you said, why are we actually doing this? Mm-hmm. What is it that we want to have at the end of this meeting that we don't have now? Mm-hmm. No, what actually, have you got an agenda for that meeting? Have got an agenda? Why are we having a meeting? All those kind of questions. Actually thinking, I'm not going to respond to your email that you sent me at 9 o'clock in the evening saying, I'm doing this in my own time. I'm not expecting a response. Don't send that. You just press delay sending. It's not complicated. Mm. I think it's about like everything, good leadership and good boundaries and people standing up for themselves. And I do think people are walking with their feet now and saying, look, I'm just not going to work like this anymore.
Yeah. And there's just like bad behaviours and etiquette issues where I'd get an invite to a meeting with no, it would just be the invite.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard of the meeting before.
Yeah.
And it'd be like, why do you need me? I'd tentatively respond and say, okay, what's this meeting about? What do you need before? Rather than just, you're expected to just turn up and then you'll sit through a 2 hour meeting you never normally attend to be given one action. Still, you pick up actions when you're not even at the meeting. Go, oh yeah, this meeting you weren't at, here's 3 actions for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But you wouldn't get on a plane if you didn't know where it's going, and it's the same philosophy. What's even worse, I think, is when people allow other people to have access to their calendars. So a lot of this stuff that we thought would be great and time-saving isn't. So we've got to get in the habit of pushing back. We've got to learn to sequence and say, yeah, I can do that, Scott, but I can't do it till Tuesday. I always use this analogy. If we were running a testing lab and you came to me and said, can you put my test tube on right now? Because it's super important and really interesting and I'm me and I'm so special. I wouldn't say, yeah, absolutely. Let me just stop the whole line and have all the test tubes crashing off to put yours in because you're lovely.
we just say, yeah, of course I can. It starts tomorrow morning at 7:30 and I promise you, you'll be the first test tube on and the first test tube off. That's the way it works. But in offices, in knowledge work, we just say yes to everything. And we don't push back enough. And we don't, I say to people, just automatically ask for it to push it back, sequence it. I can. I can start that this afternoon or tomorrow morning or next month or 2025 or whatever it is. Or why? How long should it take? And I think there's also this whole thing about leadership training. I say I'm a leadership coach, but actually, I don't think I am. I show people how to manage. I help them figure it out for themselves, how to manage. But again, there's this whole thing. People say, oh, look, I coach somebody how to do stuff. I think sometimes you have to tell people what to do. I think we've got so wishy-washy and we don't manage. And a lot of the problems is at the kind of junior management level, who are really busy, who haven't got time to explain things, have never been taught how to actually give feedback and help people with their performance. We're frightened, aren't we?
So there you go. That's just some of my favourite clips from the last year. An episode every single week. And I could have picked more, but the episode would have been far too long. But I've had lots of fun meeting lots of new people and sharing value with you, my listeners, every week. So hopefully that's given you some inspiration to check back some previous episodes or to re-listen to some and to look forward to the next year. As I said, we are carrying on. There will be another episode next week with a new guest. So until then, bye for now. A big thank you for listening to the Rebel Diaries show. Your time is precious, so it is appreciated. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit that subscribe button in your podcast app of choice so you don't miss the next one. There's a new episode every Monday morning, ideal for your commute to work or early morning walk. Until next time, take care, be a rebel, and deliver work with impact.